Sims is located in Berlin. Bruce and Colin shall return.
What will you perhaps be doling out for treats for the little kiddies tonight to come to the Colin McEnroe abode?
I have the...
You've got nothing, admit it.
I have the double cassette of Jody Ambrosio and Wayne Norman doing the 1999 Men's Basketball Championship.
We still have plenty of those available.
And also, I also have a double cassette of The Best of Kellyanne Klein. So, there is a page one story about Joe Lieberman in today's New York Times. And
yeah.
I am quoted twice, and Curry is quoted once. I just want to say, I am quoted twice, and Curry is quoted once. Also, my quotes are more entertaining than Bill's. So there's, I mean, not that it's a big competition, not that you really have to look at it that way, but I do look at it that way.
You know what?
Yeah.
You're fascinating.
Thank you. That's what the New York Times person told me. You know what? They actually interviewed me for an hour. You wouldn't think I had an hour's worth of things to say about Joe Lieberman, but it turns out I do if you just keep asking me questions. They interviewed me for an hour. And so I am quoted twice. And Bill Curry, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but I'm quoted twice. Bill Curry's quoted once. And also my quotes are more entertaining than Bill's quote is. It's one quote. The one quote of it by him, as opposed to my two quotes, it's not as entertaining as my two quotes are. Perhaps that may be him calling up to complain or to object. But even if he does call it, even if he does call up and object, it is true that I'm quoted twice and he's quoted once. He's quoted earlier in the story than I am. I don't know if that counts for anything.
Shall I get this?
It's up to you. It's a matter of personal choice. This is a phone that's ringing. It's never supposed to ring. Because it rings periodically. While he's talking on the phone, I actually do want to get into some presidential politics today. We have John Kerry's whole F-word thing. I have something that I'm prepared to say. And this comes from the heart.
You wanted Bernadette?
Is Bernadette here?
Bernadette.
Yeah.
Bernadette here?
If your name is Bernadette and you'd like to call 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC, you do have a call right here in the studio right now. Okay, I'm going to say something.
I politely told him it was a radio station.
Good.
Hung up.
I'm going to say something of an extreme nature. I actually think Howard Dean has the nomination. I know we're supposed to wait until February 3rd, at which point, you know, all this... I mean, I know we're supposed to wait until the actual primaries take place. But I kind of don't get how unless they unseal the records, you know, and there's like pictures of Howard Dean, you know, covered with maple syrup and like, you know, caribou are licking his nipples or something. Unless there's something.
How did you know?
And even then, even then, stupid people who are calling Bernadette. Take their name and phone number, and we'll call them back. Get a name and number. We'll call them back. We'll disrupt their workplace. And we'll disrupt their ideas about presidential politics. Well, anyway, I kind of don't see how he just doesn't. I mean, first of all, do you know anybody who is a passionate supporter of anybody else?
No.
Think of all of the people that you know. I mean, I know lots and lots
Although
of people.
I'm liking John Kerry more every minute.
Well, yeah. But I mean... But think of all the people that you know. Think of the conversations that you have. Think of the, you know, you go places. I mean, you know, I don't know anybody who is a passionate supporter of anybody else except Howard Dean. Now, either that's because I travel in very limited circles, which is possible. But I do know a lot of people, and because most of the people that I know have no lives, they talk about politics a lot. And I don't know. I know a lot of undecided people, and I know a lot of Howard Dean people. And I'm just talking about Democrats here. I'm not talking about Bush supporters or anything like that. But... And I don't know a single, I can't think of, if I ever did know one, a single Edward supporter or a person who passionately supports John Kerry.
Edward supporter. That's almost redundant.
I just don't get it.
Or it's like...
Or a contradiction in terms.
Contradiction in terms, yeah, that's what
it's,
I mean.
That's not quite true. I know a couple of people who are kind of down with Wesley Clark, a little bit kind of. Although, to tell you the
Well,
truth,
now wait.
I don't know anybody who isn't a political operative working for Wesley Clark.
Who is you do know one Kucinich?
Oh, there's Nina. Yeah, okay.
Supporter.
Nina speaking to me. So I don't know if that counts. If someone's not speaking to you, do they count as somebody that you know?
Well, you know that she supports him. So
yeah, but she's not speaking to me, so I don't really know her anymore.
Oh,
she's not speaking to me.
I guess it would be a problem.
I just don't think that these other people have supporters. I don't know who they are. Who supports any of these people? Nobody. That's who.
I love you on the coldest night.
I would like to point something out.
Please do.
In the previous segment, I sort of said, where are all the supporters of anybody else except Howard Dean?
Yep.
Nary a one called in. Nary a supporter of anyone else is called in. Now, it could be that if you get out into the great American heartland, there's just, wall-to-wall Gephardt supporters. But I just, Kerry, Gephardt, Edwards, dare I say, Joe Lieberman. I just thought...
Well, you'd be the expert on that.
Yeah, I'm the Joe Lieberman expert.
I am the recognized go-to guy.
Right. New York Times' go-to guy. No question about that. But I just, I just don't know anybody. I mean, I talk to a lot of people, and I avoid politics as much as possible. But people wind up talking about it. And I do know one or two people who have toyed with the Wesley Clark thing. But other than that, I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody who supports any of these. I know plenty of Deanies. I know Deanies out my kazoodie. Yeah, and I know undecided people. And I know Bush supporters. And that's it. So I think it's over. I mean, I really do. I mean, not just based on that. And that's not the only reason I think that. But I do think it's over. It's all over. But the shouting, we can go through Iowa, we can go through New Hampshire, and we can go through February 3rd, which I think is a flawed strategy. We're going to get to Bill from Harvard in just a second. But it's a flawed way of thinking. Because February 3rd, for people that don't know, is that big primary day that includes Oklahoma and Arizona and New Mexico and South Carolina. But, those are mostly what they now call red states. So who cares which Democrat wins those states? And if, in fact, the electoral votes ultimately aren't there for the taking, who cares, to predicate much of anything. I mean, guys who win states that Democrats are... I'm assuming that Arizona's just not going to go against Bush. So who cares who wins it on February 3rd? What difference does it make?
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Thank you. All right.
People wouldn't analyze it that way.
Yeah, I know, because I got it going on, all right?
Yeah. You got it going on, all right.
Listen, when my medications are balanced out, I'm as savvy as the next person, and maybe even a little bit more so. However, that tends not to be the case most of the time, and it's not the case today.
All right. You seem to be, I don't know how to describe this, a little more over the top than usual.
Yeah, I've got problems. I've got problems.
Is this something you like to talk about?
Deeply wrong inside me. I don't even really know what it is yet. I haven't really put my finger on it. But something is roiled up inside me. Anyway, Bill from Hartford has been waiting, and it's important to take this call because it's a little bit of comeuppance for me because I poo-pooed. I didn't exactly poo-poo this topic, but I didn't have a lot of enthusiasm for it. Bobby Shiller brought it up. And what I said, I think, and you were sitting there, I said, we certainly have to find a topic. We can talk about it.
Right.
But I live in Hartford, and I don't care.
Right.
And
but
so
Bill cares.
Who else is going to care? Here's Bill.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello.
I don't understand, the thinking or logic that there's only behind this idea.
Well, now explain as best you can.
Okay, what the city wants to do is have the police ignore any alarms. People have, say, alarms in their homes, whatever alarm company might be.
Yeah.
If the alarm goes off, the police don't have to respond to it. They just ignore it.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
That seems to be a really good plan.
It has to be a confirmed alarm for them to respond to it.
Yeah.
Right? That's the idea. It has to be a confirmed
alarm.
What
would justify a confirmed alarm? Would they call back and find out?
Yeah, the criminal actually has to call in.
The criminal would call in ahead of time.
The alarm that you just got there, that's... I'm actually here.
If you drop in the next 10 minutes, you may catch me.
I mean, they're trying to get people to stay in the city or move back into the city. This is kind of self-defeating. I don't understand the logic behind this, if there is any at all.
This is part of a new strategy called community non-policing. And the feeling being that in some cases, community policing doesn't work all that well. Community non-policing. They're going to try that.
Yep.
It's kind of zen. Not everybody's going to get it right away. You have to wrap your mind around it.
I called Perez's office. I called Tory's office. And they told me they've gotten, I guess, quite a few calls in regards to this. And I guess they're concerned postponing going any further with this temporarily.
Yeah. The fire department going to get into this, too?
I have no idea.
Did they say that they weren't going to pay attention to your call to Perez's office until it was confirmed?
I mean, these people are fools.
Yeah.
And I'm an Edwards supporter, by the way.
Who?
John Edwards.
You're a John Edwards supporter?
Oh, yes.
And you expect us to pay attention to your phone call? No, that's good.
I'm getting Bush's bus back to Texas.
Now, explain why you think that is. I mean, I'm seriously curious. And
I've watched, you know, quite a bit of their debates on C-SPAN and...
A school, business, and organization delays and cancellations in the state. Sponsored by John Lawrence's Acura of Avon, Big Y World Class Market, Connecticut Lighting Centers, and Dunkin' Donuts.
I think you'd agree nobody handles this bingo cancellations like we do.
You do. You are the man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be Christmas without a Vermont teddy bear under the tree, and adults love them just as much as the kids do.
That's not really true. The kids like them better. It's a falsehood. But, you know, go ahead and read it.
What do you say? They're lying here?
Yes, they're lying. I think the kids like the teddy bears better than the grown-ups do. If you're a grown-up and you like the teddy bear as much as the kid likes the teddy bear, there's something wrong with you. Just go see a psychiatrist.
All right. Let's change the thing here a little bit.
Get on Wellbutrin or something, you know?
It says right here, the Vermont teddy bear people said, you're doing such a great job for us. Yeah.
The teddy bears are great. I've had teddy bears in my house, and they're terrific teddy bears. They're the best-made teddy bears I've ever seen, and they're attractive, and they're lovely.
And you like them as much as the kids?
No, I don't. I mean, if you're as attached to the teddy bear as your kid is, because it is teddy bear, get on a different medication.
You can personalize a bear to a hobby, sport, or occupation like the nurse, fireman, hockey, or cooking bear.
Or in some places, that may be as close as you're going to get to a nurse to get the teddy bear dressed up like one.
These are absolutely the best bears you'll find. Bears that will become old friends.
If you know what I mean.
They're even unconditionally guaranteed for a lifetime.
No matter what you do to them.
Call now.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Call now and order at 1-800-829-BEAR. Or you can shop online at VermontTeddyBear.com. 1-800-829-BEAR.
Another LendEnergy.com.
To work though, as far as the cops have to verify that there's actually a crime taking place.
Well, yeah, ideally, what they're asking for is kind of an honor system where the criminal will call in. If the burglar alarm goes off, they're asking, and they know that it's unenforceable, they're asking the criminal to call in and say, yes,
I'm here.
I'm here. I did trip the burglar alarm. Yeah. Now, barring that, a security guard or some other authorized person has to call in to verify the alarm. Now, it's sort of I have several questions about this policy. One of them is, what's the point of having a burglar alarm if, in fact, I mean, if there has to be a person there to verify that the burglar alarm is going off and there's something bad is happening, what's the point of having the burglar alarm in the first place?
There isn't any point.
Yeah. It seems to be, at minimum, there ought to be like a confirmation code that a monkey could punch in. You know, they could have like a monkey on the premises, and the monkey, you know, sees something going on. And then the alarm goes off.
The monkey come with the burglar alarm?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting to ADT.
Like the monkey included?
Yeah, if ADT kind of wants to get ahead of the pack, for example, in the burglar alarm business.
Yeah.
Be the first ones to
get a monkey.
Offer the built-in monkey feature. Yeah, built-in confirmation monkey feature. Well, that's
your slogan could be "Don't monkey around."
Yeah, there you
go.
Do monkey around.
Or do monkey around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now here's the other thing. You know, the big problem apparently is false alarms. Burglar alarms that go off and send off false signals. Okay.
Yeah.
And so the city is suggesting making this change. All right. Although according to the guy who just called in, maybe they're not. Although I'm sure that's just some crap that Perez's office put out to get rid of him, basically, when he called out. But anyway, no, maybe it is. Maybe they... we're not going to do that anyway, all right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to call here anymore, right?
Okay.
We're probably not going to do that. We changed our mind. We had something for lunch and didn't agree with us that day. But we're not going to do that, so you don't have to call up anymore. And we'll take your name and number, and we'll certainly keep your name on file.
Right.
Well, anyway, okay, among the top 15 offenders in false burglar alarms... are leading the pack, the Parksville Community School, which is a municipal building. This is the city, okay? Prince Regional Vocational Technical School, which is, if not a municipal building, it's effectively a municipal.
I know what you're getting.
Government building. They're the ones sending the false alarms. It's
right.
Not like private people. And then Hartford Stage is...
Hartford Stage?
The Scrooge guy just pulls the alarm, or maybe he just, you know...
That's part of one of the plays.
Yeah, one of the ghosts.
Yeah.
Setting it off or something,
yeah.
In Christmas Carol. But they've got 30. So 57 in a year from Parkville Community School, and 43 from Prince Tech, and then 30 from Hartford Stage Company. But, you know, it seems like the municipal buildings are the big problem here. They just don't respond to any of those. But private homes, I don't think there's a real problem in private. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the calls, actually, the false calls come from private homes.
Yeah, but how do you know whether it's a false call or not?
Well, I mean, eventually you might know. I mean, because you say you show up there and there's no burglar. That doesn't mean there never was a burglar.
Well, no, but, I mean, how do you know whether to go to respond or not?
Well, because, I mean, what they're saying is that you can't go unless somebody calls in. Speaking of going, we have to go.
Yes, I know.
Teams don't like
each other. No, they hate each other.
All right, we have time for
Mr. Sports Department meeting.
Time for Mr. Ambrosio. Why, we'll just talk over this, why has an ozone hole appeared over Antarctica when chlorofluorocarbons and halons and things like that are released mainly in the northern hemisphere? In other words, all the bad stuff comes out of factories up here.
Right.
How come there's a hole down there?
Well, because it circulates, because the breezes that have been generated over the past 63 years have caused those toxic fumes and things that you mentioned to rotate 360 degrees, and they have had such an effect over Antarctica that they have burned a hole, which is why this has taken place. Now, if you notice, what were the gases you mentioned there?
Well, chlorofluorocarbons and halon.
Right. Those things are not any more of a factor in Europe and Asia and Africa, because they have moved towards they have circulated around. They caused big problems on those continents from 1971, basically, through 2001 for a 30-year period. It was awful. But now, since they have basically made their way around, it takes them about a 42-year period.
So everything blows downward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we could say that's safe, you know?
Okay. Well, I just wanted to crystallize.
Yeah. Bruce, you all right? That cough seems to have gotten the worst.
Yeah.
Ozone hole.
Yep. Everything blows down.
Everything blows downhill.
Yeah. All right, we're back. You know, once again, I mean, it's not as though we need to sort of circumvent the entire American primary process. But I don't see why this, I mean, particularly, and not that the endorsement of Al Gore is necessarily some kind of anointing. But, I mean, it just seems so many times.
He was the president last time.
Yeah, he was. He got elected president, so he should go on for something. I just don't see why Howard Dean doesn't have this kind of locked up. If they unseal these records and there's, you know, some Super 8 footage of some bizarre maple syrup drenched Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, group with Kabelia Hutchinson.
I like the effective use by you of maple syrup. I like the way you get that in there every time.
Not as effectively as how
you did with the Vermont thing.
Yeah, well, what else is there to do up there?
They're a moose.
They're a moose, that's true. So, I mean, unless there's something like that, unless there's some, you know, just complete poison pill out there, I mean, and it's not that he's the greatest candidate in the world. It's that the other eight or nine or however many of them there are now suck. You know, I mean, it really is. I was watching the...
That pretty much sums it up.
I was watching the Des Moines debate, and I was thinking, they're just awful, with the exception... I mean, Al Sharpton is terrific. He's not going to be elected in my lifetime, but he was also very good in Saturday Night Live. I mean, this sounds like a sort of a prejudiced thing to say, but the man could sing and dance. He did this whole James Brown thing that was spectacular. But, you know, Al Sharpton is great, and he's interesting and funny, and, Wesley Clark is frightening, actually. No, he's not bad, you know, and there are other ones. But, I mean, they're just, they don't move the needle, really, when you watch them. They don't ignite. They don't move the needle. And
not even Lieberman?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at them. And they're all kind of, I mean, that is a consistent problem among them. And, I mean, admittedly, they're running against the political equivalent of Tommy Smothers. You wouldn't think they would have to move the needle that much, except that he just turns out to... He's got these handlers, and they'll pull every cheap stunt in the world. I guarantee you that 3 weeks before the election, sometime in October, he's going to show up on TV with a box, you know, and it's going to be some Senor Winters thing where Osama or Saddam's head is going to be inside that box. you know, they probably have somebody's head already that is saving it for October.
No, they've got him frozen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Ted Williams thing.
Just thaw the thing out in October, you know, heat and serve. You know, I mean, they will run
the microwave for a while.
Every cheap freaking stunt. And, you know, Dean is a street fighter. And, you know, Democrats come up to me and they say, well, do his proposals really make any sense? And wasn't he a lot more conservative? And he's the governor. And, you know, does he really know what he's talking about on Social Security and Medicare? And I think it doesn't matter. Do you want to win or not? It doesn't make any difference. He's the street fighter. He's the one. It doesn't make any difference. He's right about enough things. He's not right about everything. But he's right about enough things. And all this other crap about what he did when he was running the state of Vermont, it doesn't matter. None of it matters. All that matters is that he can get nominated relatively easily, but, you know, if everybody get out of the way, which they probably ought to start doing pretty soon, and, you know, and then he can beat Bush. And the only way that you will beat Bush is through speed fighting. You will not beat him. I mean, Al Gore proved that you can go up there and say completely reasonable, smart, intelligent, well-crafted things and either get your ass kicked or, depending on how you look at the whole thing, not win by enough in order to be actually president. But whichever way, you know, whatever happens.
Be elected, but
yeah, be elected, not get but to not actually get to be in the White House. So, I mean, you know, you have to win by a bigger margin than that, as it turns out. So, but yeah, if you want to avoid the mistake of last time, send Dean out there. I mean, because these other guys, the same stuff will happen to them. I mean, Gephardt and Kerry and Edwards, they're all just basically Al Gore again. And they think that they can do this by explaining the policy a little bit more carefully so Americans, no. But Dean will go out there and, you know, he'll fight dirty. I mean, you know, he's going to kick people in the crotch and stuff. And I think that's actually, unfortunately, how you win against these people. By the way, did you know that the turkey that he was serving that time Bush was serving at the...
It was a stunt turkey.
No, it was provided by Halliburton. That's actually literally true.
I said that last week, kidding around with somebody. I wonder if Halliburton has a poultry division.
It is literally the truth that they handle the catering and stuff like that. And it was...
They handle the catering?
There was someone in their divisions handled some kind of food service thing and stuff. It was a Halliburton turkey. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
How stupid could you be?
Well, I mean, but it doesn't matter. No one will ever understand that. No one will ever care. You know, I mean, all anybody will know is that he flew in there and he served turkey.
He's coming in on a sleigh, by the way, at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these people...
It could be a surprise.
The people who are handling it... I mean, basically, I think that they have the stupid people vote locked up, you know, and that's a lot of people, right now, because they have figured out how to manipulate the stupid people. So the only hope for America is the smart people, and the smart people don't win that often.
Becker's Holiday Hour is now in effect.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
She said when she went to the front desk, there was a skull and crossbones. Perhaps this dentist went to Yale.
That could be. Well, it could be a pirate dentist, too.
Arg. Johnny Depp.
Arg. They've got some wee scurvy things got to come out of that mouth.
It could be something like that.
Yeah.
Be, you know,
there are a lot of explanations.
Jack Flannery, pirate dentist. Welcome aboard, baby.
Because in California, they may have seen dentists.
Yeah, seen dentists.
Yeah, it could be that kind of thing. You look at like a jungle explorer dentist where like a hippo comes up and opens its mouth and stuff. Ah, this particular guy, he's a pirate dentist.
That's it.
Oh, the rest of the show can't possibly be this stupid. I promise we'll do something about that.
We have to go, right? Golden sofa.
Yeah.
Arn.
Yes, please.
She made it perfectly plain. She was his boyfriend. But he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. And I thought it was worse than my baby. And she said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might.
I think that Bobby Sherwood's a little tribute to the Roland family. The idea that they stand up for each other. They take care of each other.
That's good.
I have a piece of exciting information for you. You are going to find this fascinating, all right? Now, you know Munch's painting the screen, right?
Yeah.
You know, uh-huh. I have a little blow-up doll of Screamy on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
Screamy is the guy, the name of...
Got it.
The name of the guy in the Munch painting who was holding up his hands to his face and screaming. Screamy was also, of course, the official symbol of the Lillehammer Olympics in 94 or whenever that was. Not really, but it would have been a great idea to make him screen the symbol. Well, anyway, people have often wondered, and you've probably wondered this from time to time, What was Munch so upset about when he painted this painting? Because, in fact, he was a... a lot of his other paintings aren't that upsetting. And he does describe his experience while walking in Oslo, although it was called Christiana. The city of Oslo was back then called Christiana.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, in 1893. He says, all at once, the sky became blood red. Clouds like blood and tongues of fire hung above the blue black fjord and the city, and I stood alone, trembling with anxiety, and I felt a great unending scream piercing through nature. Is what it
was
what
he wrote drunk?
What he wrote it. Well, that was one of the possibilities. He was just freaking hammered. Also Oslo sunsets are kind of extreme anyway. Maybe it was just sort of not a day like any other day, just a little bit more extreme. A lot of people thought that. Well, this other magazine that I get, Sky and Telescope, comes out today with this report.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, that's where it's printed. Yeah.
They figured out, okay, that's 1893, but what they figured out was that Munch occasionally would paint his paintings based on things that happened to him years earlier. And they started thinking about this, and then they thought, Krakatoa. Krakatoa.
Krakatoa.
Krakatoa. Krakatoa.
Why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, it was an island in Indonesia that the whole friggin' thing just blew up.
Yeah, and then you've got Norway and Indonesia right next to each other.
Well, in fact, the dust from Krakatoa filled the atmosphere and was dispersed all over the world and did create kind of optic effects in the atmosphere all over the place. For example, in New York City, on November 28th, 1883, the New York Times reported, quote, soon after 5 o'clock, the vessel, wait a minute, they didn't do it in the Norwegian accent. Soon after 5 o'clock, the western horizon suddenly flamed into brilliant scarlet with crimson sky and clouds. Many thought it was a great fire that was in progress. No. But in fact, it was just, the setting sun hitting all this incredible dust that had come up from Krakatoa. Because Krakatoa was it was a volcanic explosion that pretty much took out a whole island. 36,000 people were killed by tsunamis. So it turns out now they can backtrack and work it out with his journals and stuff like that. And probably what was happening was Munch's walking down the street one night and suddenly this complete Krakatoa effect just blew his mind.
Freaked this guy out.
Yeah.
And he's so scared.
That he goes home and he thinks, the scream.
Yeah.
And that's
all paid off for him.
Yeah. But isn't that interesting, the Krakatoa?
That's very interesting.
1883.
We're very lucky to have you to ferret out this stuff.
Just a little thing that you can maybe bring up at
somebody's day.
At a Christmas party or something. Let's say you're at a Christmas party and there's nothing to talk about. And people are just going on and on about their lives and how boring they are and their yoga class.
I can't imagine. I don't know anybody that would do that.
Yeah. In other words, people talking about their yoga class and their new glasses and stuff like that. And you're ready to talk. You're ready to scream. You're ready to go totally Munch on.
I'm going to bring that baby out quick.
Bring this up. Okay, we've got Dick from Portland. We only got 43 seconds to make
Dick.
One.
Hi, Colin. How are you?
Fine.
I got a question. When is this guy Lieberman going to come back to Connecticut and do what he's getting paid to do? Instead of running around the country beating a dead horse, he's not going to get elected. And he knows he's not going to get elected.
We all know he's not going to get elected.
So
you
why
know
didn't
it?
He come back?
You know it. I know it. We all know it. We all know Joe Lieberman's not going to get elected. Bob Dole knows it.
I'll tell you what. I think if we all promise not to be cranky with him and not to take the tone that I'm hearing in your voice now, he'll come back. But if he feels that we're going to scold him and speak harshly to him the way that you're speaking right now, he probably won't come back. So if you want him to come back, it's like when your cat runs away.
Yeah.
If you stand up on the porch going, come on back, where the hell are you? The cat's never going to come back. But if you stand up and say, here, kitty, 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 here, senator,
yeah.
Here, senator, here, failed presidential candidate, here, complete miserable
here,
failure.
Loser.
Here, loser, then he'll come back.
Toi qui conduis, moi, c'est moi, bon alors c'est toi. Y'a du whisky dans la boîte à gants et des américaines
qui so try to picture this in your mind, alright? You are Noma Garcia Parra, you are in Hawaii on a honeymoon with the lovely Mia Hamm, and what do? You call a Boston sports talk show. Wait a minute, honey, wait there in bed, I'm holding for Bob Neumeier. What is wrong with this man?
Oh, that's great.
I would divorce him, and then I would kick his head like a soccer ball if I were her.
It's time for Sports Atois, the very French sports discussion segment. Eric, Monsieur Arnold, Dean, Monsieur Receiver, to myself. We have gone to la mer.
You know, we've talked so many times about the fact that there are 25...
Yes, pretty
I'm
serious.
The BTS football the computer is going to start reprogramming our microwaves to blow up and stuff like that.
One other thing, the cover story in USA Today is about hazing. I had no idea how widespread hazing still is among high school kids, particularly boys and girls.
Yeah.
And there are fatalities as a result of it, and it happens not just in big cities or at urban schools or just suburban schools. It is at all schools. And it appears that so many of them who were hazed want to make up for that by hazing the next group and hazing them even stronger than they had to suffer.
Yeah.
And it's self-perpetuating, and it's a real big problem. Anybody who's interested should read the article. It's in USA Today today.
Get hazed at Yale?
I was not hazed, no.
You were no hazing there?
But there was, well, there may have been hazing, but you see, one way of avoiding hazing is to be an uninvolved loner. And if you don't join...
There you go.
If you don't join things, the likelihood that you'll be hazed goes way down.
What an escape valve that is.
Yeah, beautiful.
If you think about it, it's a foolproof mechanism for avoiding hazing.
Yep.
So, because otherwise, yes, you're right.
But nobody hazed Ted Kaczynski.
No, exactly. Yeah. And otherwise, there's this great chain of hazing, as Arnold points out, and then eventually these people get into the Pentagon, you know, and then they have weapons and stuff, and they're really mad about some wedgie they got in 1928 or something.
Somebody's had it, too.
Maybe Ted Kaczynski was hazed, and he's getting even with
that might be it.
Yeah.
You know, Rumsfeld is still, you know, working out some pink belly he got, you know, in, you know, the 40s or something.
Pink belly is one of the things they do with the hazing, actually, according to this article. They just whack somebody in the stomach until his stomach turns very red.
Let's go do that to Matt Dwyer. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that.
Imagine.
We did that last week.
Let's randomly pick out and assault a news person every day. No, we won't do that. We're all done with sports. We thank you very much. And we ask everyone to go in the spirit of peace in this holiday season.
Dollar Hill Switch. Do you remember when he came out with the violence on TV thing and the sex on TV thing?
Yes.
And the V-chip and all that?
That
was the main platform that rose him to the top. Well, about 4 or 5 months later, he took $5 million donation from the big smut peddlers in Hollywood, Weinstein and Miramax.
As long as we're making Joe Lieberman's day even worse than it already was when he got up this morning. Well, I'm sure he spent most of the day lying on the floor moaning in a diaper or something. But, you know, I mean, you know, within the last couple of weeks, he came out against fatty foods, and he came out in favor of all this nutritional labeling and reining in the fatty food industry and all this kind of stuff. This is one of his latest platform issues, and somebody pointed out that he aggressively sought to be photographed eating a deep-fried Twinkie at one of those hideous Iowa state fairs. A deep-fried Twinkie.
Yeah.
And now he's Mr. Nutrition.
He probably wants to get a fundraiser from the fast food companies, and then he'll go off of that platform for a while.
But I don't know if he's that much worse than anybody else. But I don't think that's why Gore did it. I think Gore did it because he thinks he can win. And I think Gore's biggest thing is he would like Bush out of the White House, and I think he will endorse any candidate he thinks is viable. We want to thank everybody who called in and listened and paid attention to today's show, and our producer, Mr. Bobby Sherwood.